Hello, and welcome back to Sit Podcast. My name is Maya. This is the podcast about living life spiritually. Hello, and welcome to this podcast. Today is very special. I have a guest on today's podcast. It's been a little while. And so today I am going to be sitting down with Jen Berlingo. And she is someone that I've followed on Instagram for a long time. I love the work that she does. She is also has her background similar to me in therapy and art therapy, the counseling realm, and she has begun to move into more of a coaching space. She just is coming out with a book right now, which is really exciting. So it's for pre-sale right now at the time of the release of this episode. I believe that it comes out officially in April. And that book is called Midlife Emergence. It's all about the transition that happens around the midlife mark. And she's going to be talking more about that in the episode. So stay tuned for that. You can find Jen on Instagram at Jen Berlingo, and her website is the same. I think you can find her pretty much everywhere there. And her book is available, Midlife Emergence by Jen Berlingo, and it's really interesting. I think whether or not you're at the age that she is catering toward in her audience, it still has a lot of themes that are applicable to everyone. I know that it sure feels that way for me. So I hope you enjoy this conversation that we're about to have and enjoy the episode. Okay. Hi. Welcome to the episode. I'm here with Jen. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Happy to have you here. This is exciting. I haven't done too many interviews recently, so I'm diving back into the interviewing people, and I felt like you were you've kind of been in the background of my awareness for a long time, so I wanted to reach out and connect. And it also happened to align perfectly with your book, which I really didn't know you had a book coming out, and it was kind of perfect timing, so I'm glad that you're here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's really good timing. Yeah, it worked out well.
Yeah, awesome. So just to start off, I already kind of shared a little bit about you, your kind of bio, your formal self, but I would love if you would just kind of share a little about who you are and what you have going on, what lights you up.
Wow, yeah. I'm a mom. I am a recently divorced queer mom to a teenager. I am a midlife coach. I've recently pivoted from doing straight up counseling and art therapy to midlife coaching. I'm still a licensed counselor and an art therapist. I'm a Reiki master. I am a visual artist. I love painting. I love, fluid media, just really uncontrolled, colorful, loose media. And I'm an author now. My book just became available. So that's really exciting because I've been wanting to write a book since I was like 3 years old. And that happened.
That's awesome.
The thing to light me up right now have a lot to do with family, my unconventional beloved family, my friends, my writing, and my art. Yeah. And my cats.
Beautiful. That's awesome. Yeah. I have your Oracle deck, your Soul Space, right? Is that what it's called? Your Soul Space.
Yeah. The Oracle. Soul Space Oracle. Yes. Yeah. That's been out there for 7 years this month or next month, wow. I think, which is so funny to me. Yeah. I actually pulled a card from it right before we started recording, and I got the Solitude card. And I just have it right here on my desk. Sometimes I pull a card before like a meeting or an event or something. So
yeah, that's really awesome. I I've been following you on social media for a while now, because we have similar paths. So I also have my master's degree in art therapy and counseling, and was a counselor therapist for about 5 years, like in the traditional mm-hmm. sense, and then mm-hmm. Transitioned into coaching and also do Reiki and art cool. and all of the things. So we have a lot of overlap. And so I've always kind of watched your journey unfold, and it's been interesting. You know, I think that when everybody else's life was kind of like transitioning and changing and being uprooted, mm-hmm. I saw that a little bit reflected in what you shared on social media and some changes that were happening yeah. in your life around that time. And I was also, it's like around, you know, COVID and post COVID time, also going through a divorce, a separation, and mm-hmm. changing what my life looked like. So I know you also did that a little bit. I'd love to maybe give the listeners a little background as to kind of the catalyst to this change, kind of what came sure. about in your life.
Yeah. Gosh. So when I entered my 40s, everything just felt pretty underneath. There was like a burning under the surface. Everything was like on paper, pretty awesome. I was married to my best friend basically. And you know, we have an amazing kid. And I was in California at the time. I was working in private practice, doing counseling and art therapy, and, just humming along, you know, outwardly, inwardly, there was a lot going on that, was coming back up for me around my sexuality. I've always known I was queer, like, and my husband, ex-husband knew that as well when we got together that, you know, I was also attracted to women, and it was like not really an issue between us until it became louder, probably around, you know, the time I entered my 40s. And it was like there was a sadness about, is this something that in this life is not going to manifest? And we just tried to figure out what to do with that together. And at the time I had, so I've been meeting with this astrologer since like 2005, and I like to do readings with him on my birthday every year. And the year I was turning 42, I had a session with him, and I was telling him what was happening for me, and he was like, "Oh my gosh, you are like perfectly on time with the Uranus opposition," which I wasn't that familiar with. I had known a lot about the Saturn return and then the, mm-hmm. you know, second Saturn return and then potentially the third if we live that long. And the Uranus opposition doesn't get nearly as much press, but basically what he told me, it's like the astrologers speak for midlife crisis, and it peaks at age 42, and we feel the effects of it for a couple of years on either side of that age. And I was turning 42 that week that I was talking to him, and I was telling him, you know, what was kind of up for me and how I was planning to navigate and explore that. And what he told me was that Uranus is has an 84-year cycle. So 42 is when it's halfway across the zodiac from the time, you know, from where it was when we were born. Mm-hmm. And it's the planet of freedom and rebellion and higher awareness. And it teaches us to find like true inner freedom through rejecting whatever is not serving us. And we shift our identification from like the expectations that have been put on us in childhood to a more mature expression of ourself. So moving into our spiritual adulthood. Mm. And it's like, and the way he said it was like, Uranus is like a good friend that calls us on our bullshit, and it blows up anything that has been repressed or held back when we hit that passage. So it really resonated and validated a lot of what I was feeling, and I was already writing about it at the time. Yeah. And it was just like, you know, at this stage of life, midlife, which tends to begin, at least developmentally in the 40s and go through like, you know, mid 60s. But that beginning part of it, this entrance into it, there's this pull. I mean, like in developmental psychology, Erickson talks about it as stagnation versus generativity, but there's this pull toward the generativity that became so strong in me, like the growth, rather than staying in what was safe and familiar and, you know, stagnant, that felt stagnant for me. I had this like really fiery, magnetized pull toward growth and evolution and exploring the mystery and the unknown. And that felt really fucking scary. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of what was happening internally. And yeah, I've been navigating that. I'm 47 now. And it's been, you know, the past, I don't know, almost decade of really feeling a lot of that. And then the peak of it in the last 5 years has brought about a lot of different changes. So I moved from California back to Boulder, where I used to live, in graduate school at Naropa, and to be more around community. And then when the pandemic hit, my ex-husband and I were already starting to explore ethical non-monogamy as a potential solution for, you know, the desires that were alive in me. And it became pretty clear during the lockdown part of early 2020 that that wasn't necessarily what either of us wanted our marriage to look like, or it didn't feel like marriage. And we were like, we need to shift the way our relationship looks. Not just turning marriage on its head, but also divorce, like really divorcing as a form of love and as a form of allowing each other to be our most free and expressed self. So we are still super close. He lives down the street, you know, we're co-parenting our kid together, and it's been hard. And I mean, yeah, hard. It's been great in a lot of ways too, but like, yeah, it's just been a huge life transition that I've been undergoing, and was inspired to write about it while I was in the middle of it all, in the mess of it all, because I feel like, I don't know, I think we often communicate our stories when we're on the other side of them, like, ta-da, you know? And that's all great. Like, I'm still not there. You know, my book doesn't end with like a bow, you know, tied around the story. Like, it's great now. No, but like, I think that that's part of the change that I want to see happening too, is like really just sharing from, you know, what people call the messy middle. And because I think it really validates and empowers others to really come forward in their fullest truth, even if it's not pretty. So I don't know. That's been my intention and like sharing it. Yeah. That was a really long answer to your question.
No, that was beautiful. That was perfect. Exactly the background that I was, you know, kind of asking about. And yeah, I can imagine that it was challenging throughout. And it also sounds like you took many brave steps, many steps that were maybe not so sure-footed, but yeah, were ignited from inside you somewhere. And you're like, I have to trust this, even though I have no idea what's on the other side.
Yeah, that was, yeah, really hard, because I think like at the time I was really trying to orient only toward my inner voice, because listening to the expectations or projections or shoulds, you know, externally, whether they were from really well-meaning people, family and friends, or even an astrology reading, even, you know, pulling oracle cards or tarot cards, like I started to really have a distaste for that for a period of time, where I was like, no, I only want to orient toward my inner voice, and the external inputs were feeling really hard. And it takes a lot of faith to like trust that inner voice without bouncing it off of external things, and especially when it's like not really conforming to the expectations that have been put upon, you know, it's like as a recovering good girl, like that's sort of the nightmare scenario, right?
So
that's pretty tough to bring these more I guess subversive aspects of myself to the surface, and then just try to trust not knowing at all what was going to be on the other side, you know. Just walking into groundlessness.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly how it felt when I went through my divorce. And, you know, it was fairly amicable, but it was my choice, and my ex-husband and I don't talk anymore. So there was like even more of a divide from that support system, right? Where I was like, okay, see you never. Hopefully I'm okay on the other side. And
wow, yeah,
scary. It's super hard. And I actually just put out an episode. My last podcast episode was about my divorce, and
I listened.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Cool. I have a little background there, because I did listen to that episode.
Cool. Yeah. And related. Just, yeah. The trust, the faith, and the, you know, on the other side of that, the strength in myself that I gained from being like, okay, mm-hmm. I can make a big change. I can take a big leap and catch myself on the other side. Even if there's right. nobody else there to catch me, I can catch myself. And it sounds like you had a similar experience there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's that feeling of like, I got myself no matter what. And it's really hard. I mean, there are days where I feel that level of empowerment. And then there are days where I'm like, oh, I just want to, you know, hide under my weighted blanket.
Totally.
So it's like, I think it takes both. I think it takes the, you know, the out breath or the, I don't know, that whole like the expansion. And then there's a contraction naturally after each big move.
There's lots of like sobbing under the covers and, you know, like right. having those really big emotional releases for sure. It's not all just like, I caught myself and now I feel great. But, you know, yeah. I mean, there's you build that muscle through all of the mm-hmm. the heartache that you move through, I think.
Yeah. Totally.
Good for you. One of the things I wasn't expecting when I got divorced was now I tell people, and more often than not, I get the response of, oh, congratulations. Uh-huh. Good for you. You know, instead of people being like, oh, I'm so sorry you got divorced. People are like, oh, congrats. Like if you got divorced, then that's a good thing to be on the other side of, because obviously yeah. something wasn't working. So congratulations on on your divorce and taking that step.
Right. Yeah. Because it does mean that there's been some level of soul searching or mm-hmm. Transformation or something internally that's needed to happen for that right. to take place. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what is it called? The at 42, the astrological piece.
The Uranus opposition.
Opposition. Okay. Yeah. I was like, what was that word?
Because it's opposite your birth time. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That makes sense. I feel like I've heard of that in passing, but I just got through my Saturn return. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm good for like 30 years. I can hold on. And now I'm like, oh no,
there's another there's one. Something else. Yeah.
There's another one coming in like 12 years. Yeah.
Right. The Saturn return, it's interesting. Like I remember at the time when I went through that thinking like how intense that was, mm-hmm. like that whole period. I know it's different for different people, like 27 to 31 or 29 yeah. to 31. I got married at 27. I graduated from Naropa at 29. Mm-hmm. I got pregnant at 30, had my kid at 31. Like a lot of stuff was changing there. And that's like a time of, you know, I guess the anxiety of like stepping into adulthood and like, who totally. Are you going to be?
Yeah.
And I think there's like a shooting that I did like with myself around like having my shit together by that point. Mm-hmm. So I was in my Saturn return, feeling that pressure and doing these things that somewhat were, you know, expected and status yeah. quo type things. Right. And like the one thing I was shifting out of is I'd gotten out of corporate life. Because I did work in ad tech for most of my 20s before going to Naropa. Mm. And I was getting out of that and, you know, stepping more into counseling and other things that were really more aligned with my soul. And so I felt like, oh, that's my like rebellion part or whatever. It's like, I'm doing my witchy woo woo stuff or whatever. Yeah. Well, it's like more out loud now and I'm going to use that in service of others. But I always think like, maybe if I'd done that passage a bit differently, my midlife passage wouldn't have been so disruptive. I don't know. Maybe that's not true though. But I wouldn't have traded it for anything. I have zero regrets about my marriage and having my kid. I mean, all of those were beautiful, beautiful times I would never wish away or erase. But it's interesting that that was a coming together of marriage, child, you know, and yeah. that my Uranus opposition is really about, untangling at least like what the vows of that marriage were and taking mm-hmm. different vows with each other about what we're going to be going forward as a family.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. I think that's such a gift that you're able to do that in a way that sounds, you know, fairly peaceful on both ends and shift in that way. Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, all of those big astrological life changes are always, you know, in pursuit of bringing us a little bit closer to our authentic self, right? That's at yes. least what it seems is. It's like, okay, we're going to shake up anything that doesn't feel like you anymore, and we're going to yeah. throw it and, you know, see what lands. And then on the other side, you're going to look totally different. Does that totally. Feel kind of the same for like the Saturn return and what you just went through?
Yeah, I really think so. I think that the Uranus opposition, while I'm not at like the screaming midpoint of it anymore, I'm still mm-hmm. feeling the reverb and what it feels like from the point where I am now. It's definitely more alignment to an inner truth, to an authentic self. But the Uranus opposition is really about individuating, like our first path of individuation happening in our teenage years, individuating from our family and our parents or our caregivers, to establish like an independent identity of self, right? And then this is another path of individuating. But what happens during the Uranus opposition is about individuating from societal expectations and mm-hmm. cultural norms. And some of that may also be early childhood conditioning and interject, you know, the messages we received from outside that we've like internalized as our own voice, but it's like separating out from those. Mm-hmm. I have a couple chapters in my book about that, like how I feel like the introjects I got around needs, around sex, around love and relationships and all sorts of different areas of life around spirituality, like what was taught to me, I guess, and then unpacking all of that mm-hmm. And kind of rewriting my own rules and my own paradigm for like what I want the second half of life to be. So I think the way that I've seen my 40s is like a waiting room sort of between the first act of life and the second act of life. And it's like, at this point we have this opportunity and I see it as a great one, which is why I reframed it from crisis to emergence. It's not an emergency. It's like, this is a time where we can sit and reflect and be like really mindful architects of what we want the second act of life to be and mm-hmm. how to have that more in alignment with self rather than, you know, any external expectation. So I think I'm definitely moving through that. I don't know when the end point of that is. Maybe never. Like, yeah, at some point, what is it, 59 is the next Saturn return. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'll be coming up on that in 12 years. Maybe we'll check in. You'll be at your Uranus opposition.
Right. We'll both be like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. I can't handle it. Yeah. We'll have another episode. I love that idea. That's funny. It's a date. Yeah. Yeah. Gosh. That's I love the term mindful architect. I think that's such a beautiful way of phrasing it. That just like slipped out for you so effortlessly. I was like, oh, I want to like chew on that a little bit more, because the idea of being able to like construct intentionally what you're going to step into, you know, I think so often, like you talked about in early life, we're given all of these different pieces that we're carrying and, you know, from our parents and society and all this stuff. And then up in our adulthood, we're figuring out like, okay, how do I carry all of that and be myself at the same time? And now mm-hmm. it sounds like you're like, okay, I'm going to put all of that down. I'm going to stop carrying it completely. And I'm going to choose, you know, my own pieces to start carrying through life and to construct something new.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It is that. And it's, it's something completely new. And there's like a core self that I feel like I came in with and that I'm remembering. Mm-hmm. Not that I forgot her, but I think that, you know, and kind of going along with this good girl people pleaser sort of makeup that I've had in the first half of life, like really overachieving and doing the things that I was mm-hmm. supposed to be doing and all of that, there is a way in which this core part of me, and I think they're really there are parts of me that kind of got somewhat buried. I mean, they were there mm-hmm. and I was doing them, but I was trying to do them in acceptable ways.
Yeah.
And now it's like, no, like, and so I'm remembering like my childhood, how connected to spirituality I was and how connected to myself in that way that I was. And I feel like a lot of that is coming more to the surface in a more congruent way for me. Like where, I think about myself as a little kid, like I spent a ton of time creating art, writing in my journal. I had a little typewriter and I would type up novels. I would be like, I'm writing, this is chapter 5. And like, I would literally, I would make like magic potions in the woods out of like pebbles and spit petals and leaves and like mix them up with a stick. Like, you know, and I was, when I was 7, I think I was in like second grade, I started calling myself a witch. And I tell this story in my book. But I truly thought that I was the reincarnation of this local legend where I grew up in Virginia Beach. Her name was Grace Sherwood. And she was known as the Witch of Pungo. And in the late 1600s, she did like plant medicine. She tended to animals. She made healing remedies. And I learned about her story. And I felt really connected to her because there was this trial of her as a witch. Like she was taken out on this boat in a place called Witch Duck Point, which was this pond that I used to look at out of the window of my pediatrician's office. Like I remember standing against this like floor to ceiling window, like looking at this pond and thinking about her. She was taken out to be tried in this pond, and she was tied around her neck with like a 13-pound Bible. Mm-hmm. And everyone in the town came and they were yelling like Duck the Witch. And I don't know why they weren't saying Dunk, but the story is Duck the Witch, what's called Witch Duck Point. But and they were shaming her as she was thrown overboard. And it's really a shit situation because if she sank, she would mm-hmm. die.
Yeah.
And if she floated, she was a witch and she'd go to jail. Right. It was like, these are not awesome options, right? And the legend is that she untied herself underwater twice, two different times, and bobbed up to the surface and swam around the pond laughing at all of the people. And I was like, I love the audacity of that. Like, how badass is she, you know? And as a kid, I was like, oh yeah. But she did get put in jail, and eventually mm-hmm. she got out, and she spent the rest of her life, I think, on her farm. But I don't know. It's just so weird thing. Like I really connected to it. And I was living in a place in Virginia Beach. It's pretty conservative. There's a big military population there and pretty conservative overall, but there's this like faction, maybe it's a backlash that has some degree of spirituality. Not that those are juxtaposed entirely, but like the Edgar Casey Foundation is there and there are a lot of crystal shops and all of this right. stuff. So like I remember being 12 and riding my bike to this crystal shop called the Heritage Store, which is still there, every weekend. And I would sit there on the floor and I would read for hours about like dreams and astrology and Reiki and the chakra system. And I would look at all the crystals, and these two or three women that worked there were so patient with me. They would teach me about all the stones and what they all mean and everything. And it was like, you know, a little 12-year-old me like doing that on the weekends felt, I don't know, it felt really like a remembering as I was learning yeah. this stuff, rather than a new thing. I don't know. So that has always been like, there have been these parts of my own just inner spirituality that I've tried to sort of find again and bring into, you know, during Saturn return time, bring into my career by leaving the corporate world and, mm-hmm. you know, going into transpersonal counseling and art therapy and Reiki and trying to actually see how these parts of me could come forward more and serve. And I think it's just a different level of that at this point, where I'm really honoring the little one of me.
Mm-hmm.
Like she knew a lot, you know. and I think that I didn't give her enough credit necessarily in the first yeah. part of life. So
yeah. Wow, that's beautiful. Yeah, I think that's, you know, like inner child work, right? People talk about that a mm-hmm. lot, and it's kind of a nebulous term a little bit. I don't know if everybody knows yeah. exactly like how you do that or what that looks like, but I think that what you're speaking about is totally the process. It's just remembering and honoring and integrating and almost reparenting that piece
yes.
within you, nurturing her to be like, hey, it's safe to come out and to explore these things. And I'm sorry that I, you know, pushed you aside for a little while to fit in, but you can come mm-hmm. back now and you can live through me in this adult body and we can do this thing together.
Yeah, totally. And I think that the part that feels, there's definitely a reparenting of the little witch mm-hmm. one of me, but I think that the piece that I is both really personal to me, but I think universal in a lot of people, at least, well, my generation, but I think generations before and after mine, is this witch archetype, mm-hmm. where I think that a lot of women, myself included, have a body memory of persecution, like a persecution fear for bringing our full truth forward. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, that does include some of the parts of me that are more subversive or unconventional or queer, mm-hmm. Or just empowered even. But I feel like that is what I'm here to bring forward. And it's scary, but I mm-hmm. have to do it scared. Because I think that like when I mostly read nonfiction and I love reading memoirs, but when I read stories of other people that really tap into that truth. I feel like it's instructive just innately, like by just speaking their truth or speaking out in some way that, like, I think just sharing the parts of us that have been shamed mm-hmm. or have felt shameful can be connecting. The things that have made us feel alone are actually what bring us into connection. So I don't know, but that witch piece and the persecution piece, I almost feel like I'm putting myself by putting a book into the world about, you know, mm-hmm. my life that's pretty vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I'm going to be on the stake in the town square, like in a way, right? Like, I don't know who's going to, like, it's not like the whole town will be reading it or whatever. And we don't have a modern day town square except the internet, maybe.
Right. Like, yes.
but it's scary. It's so freaking scary. And I'm having a lot of those responses. Like, there's excitement and there's like fear about that. And so I think that's a part of this time of life, is like bringing all of that forward and then confronting that witch wound.
Yes. Yes. The witch wound, that's a real thing. I think that that's really relatable to a lot of people, especially, you know, women and in, you know, maybe the Americas or New England mm-hmm. type of area, or, you know, just the East Coast, things like that. Mm-hmm. I just moved to Vermont, to the East Coast, and even just like, I can feel, it feels different here. Like there's a different energy for many reasons. I mean, like there's just been horrific things to all sorts of different cultures and sects of people mm-hmm. in general. But as someone, you know, that I also kind of have that identification with the witchy side of myself and my feminine and things like that, it's definitely something to overcome, right? To like have some bravery and courage in that. And, you know, I love the story of that woman that you told and her like swimming around and laughing. That's such a great visual to be like, you know, just to carry you through the moments that you're afraid. You're like, you know what, on the other side, I'm going to go for a swim and I'm going to laugh in their face. You know?
Yeah. Like, totally. And she did that twice. I remember just that part of the story as a kid was like, fuck yeah. Like,
yeah.
that energy. Like I knew I didn't have the, I don't know. I just didn't have that in me at that age. I was more living, you know, in fear, I think, of a lot of like authority. Mm-hmm. And then just to see that as an example, it was something I would like always kept my eye on. Like, okay, I can grow into that.
Right. That's a great, archetype, a great like hero's journey, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Right. Like she has a great storyline there to follow. Yeah. I, you know, I work, obviously, I think every art therapist and every counselor works within the hero's journey to a certain extent, because it's so understandable. And I imagine, you know, writing a book, probably some of that came up for you in understanding like your dark night and your gifts and the people that helped you along the way. And I don't know if you feel like you're at the other side of it now that the book is being released, or if you're still, you know, making another round or where you are there.
Yeah, but it's so interesting. Like I feel like definitely like the prodigal daughter sort of situation in terms of like my family, and the like rainbow sheep, the witch on the outskirts of the village, you know, figuring out like in solitude, the card I pulled, the gifts that she has to bring and then bringing them in to the people and then retreating, you know, and being with herself. Like that feels resonant to me. Definitely that hero's journey arc. But I am so not the hero in my book, which is, I mean, or in my life, like, I feel like I'm more the anti-hero in some way when I look at it. Ooh, and I write about that, that I'm not aiming to be, I don't know, to protect myself in a way that, Nadia Bolz-Weber, there's a quote that I cite in my book by her that says, like, we do the most harm when what we're protecting is the notion that we're good. And I started out my book talking about that because it's like, I'm not actually trying to justify the choices I made or say that this is good because this and this, like some of it was really faulty and ugly. And it's hard to put that out there. Yeah. So yeah, the word, you know, I mean, I know hero's journey means a different thing, but I'm like, I'm so not the hero in this book. Like if anything, my ex-husband probably is, but, it's a funny thing to like write all of that down and see see the arc, you know, outside of yourself. It's almost like art therapy where you create something and you see it at a distance and then you're like, oh, now I can relate to this. And yeah, my book, which I just got the hard copy of, feels like that.
Exciting. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah. That externalization, you know, I'm sure you're still so close to the project that it maybe doesn't even quite feel like it's been externalized fully yet, but you know, looking back, I'm sure that that will be a really, a really profound thing to just see external versions of your reality a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And then gosh, how that's received and perceived by other people and that whole journey. Are you nervous about that?
Hell yeah, I'm nervous. I think it's like art though, where at a certain point you like put it out there. Like I create paintings and they're in a couple places in Boulder and like for sale and stuff. And I'm like, well, I don't know. Like there's a sense of like once we make art like for ourselves and then put it out there, it belongs to other people. Like it's theirs to relate to, it's theirs to feel about or project upon or whatever. And that doesn't have to do with me. It's easier with a visual piece that's not necessarily that interpretable or like, you know, is that even a word? I don't know. But like a book, it's like, yeah, I'm sure that some people will have a reaction that isn't something that will feel good to me. And I have pretty thin skin. So I'm like, wow, this is pretty masochistic of me to like put myself out there. And, but I think that at some point in it, it's like, I need to just let go and let whoever reads it relate to it in their own way and get out of it, whatever they will. It's like, life goals. this Georgia O'Keeffe quote that I love, where she says, I don't want to butcher the quote, but it's something like, I've settled it for myself, so flattery and criticism go down the same drain and I am quite free. And it's like, yeah, the flattery too, right? Like, so not to have ego caught up in it either way, like people being like, this is awesome or this is total trash. Okay.
Like,
this isn't about me anymore. So it's very personal and it's very like, I don't know. I'm trying to see it as the same way as putting a painting into the world might feel.
Yeah. I think that disconnection from the flattery piece would probably be where I would get caught the most, right? Because like you want to be appreciated in your vulnerability. Once we put something that's vulnerable and close to our heart out there, we want to know that, you know, we're not alone and we're not the only one, we're not a freak.
Totally.
Nobody is going to disown us, right? Like we want some of that validation a little bit.
Oh my gosh, that is so, I mean, it's life goals is what I said. I'm not there. I'm not like, oh yeah, that's how I feel about it. Like that's how I want to feel about it. And oh my god, I've lost so many nights of sleep thinking about, oh shit, this is going to be in the world and people are going to read it, and then picturing like my mom reading it, picturing, you know. Ooh. And there was a point where I'm like, okay, I should just send the book to my mom. There was a difficult conversation that needed to be had there. And she read it and we had the conversation and it went better than I expected. And so there are those, like, I don't know, where I picture just different people reading it and I'm like, maybe they'll never read it. My mom would, but like maybe the random people I'm thinking of, I'm like, oh shit. You know, like I still do that. I am not detached from that in any way, but it would be so nice to not be human.
Right. Yes. It would be so nice to not have emotional attachment to things. I know.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Awesome. Very cool. Well, I think it's such a great conversation. I'm doing a course right now that's, it's called The Maiden Rites, and it's kind of about the rites of passage that we miss out on in life, basically. Yeah. And I'm doing, you know, this as far as like the maiden, mother, crone type of archetypes there within the feminine. And I decided to start with that first one with the maiden, just because I think that's like a foundational piece that we miss out on a little bit.
Yes.
A lot of it. I think that that's totally just bulldozed over in our society. Like, how do we actually hold feminine energy and masculine energy, regardless of like, you know, sexuality or whatever,
gender,
anything like that. How do we hold on to those pieces in us and balance them and figure out how to navigate that? And it sounds like your work has been kind of another rite of passage in a way within like maybe that age range generally of the mother phase, right? Which like the mother can be literal or just birthing things out into the world, which is exactly what you're doing. And
how to do that
gracefully.
or awkwardly.
Or awkwardly. either way.
A lot of grace in it.
Yes.
Like I think that it's the reality of it. But like, yeah, the mother, maiden, crone, I think about sometimes like between the mother and the crone is there this wise woman phase of like, it's still the mother and not quite the crone, but like the children who have aged into a place of not being as dependent. And then there's this like nebulous time, right? Where it's not like, I am an elder in my community. I'm not quite there yet. I'm not wise enough yet. I'm still learning. And I'm the mother, but I don't know. There's this like kind of time in between. And I definitely do rites of passage work with, I do one-on-one midlife coaching with women, but I also have run these midlife emergence groups. Mm-hmm. And some of that work is about creating personal ceremony and rites of passage work to step into this second act of life, sort of the intentionality behind like creating that for oneself. So it sounds similar and at a different point of growth.
Yeah. Really beautiful. I think that that's so necessary and, you know, not just like a couple times in life, but as many times as we feel called to it, right? To have some ceremony, some intentional rite of passage or, you know, intention on what we're moving toward. Yeah. And I'm 30 now. So I kind of was like, okay, I'm like looking back on one phase and looking towards another, but still kind of cradling this middle ground where it's a little scary, but I've also learned a lot and haven't learned nearly enough, you know? And so trying to navigate that and share that with other people. And then I think it sounds like the next phase is kind of exactly where you're going, which is exciting that you're doing that work. And I think that that's so common for people to have maybe like, you know, have had children and now the children are old enough to self-sustain. And it's like, oh gosh, okay, now I need to remember myself and reestablish that. And that's exactly, you know, where that comes in, that crisis emergence, whatever you want to call it, however it feels.
Yeah. I mean, it can feel that way. And the reframe of it feels important. Although the initial thing of it, I think it's a really hard time to feel that burning or that thing. Like what I hear from my clients a lot, it's like, is this all there is? Is there more? I want more. Why aren't I happy with enough or what I've done? Like they've carefully constructed this beautiful life. And some cases, and in my case, I did. Where like on paper you have all the things, right? And then it's like, why aren't I satisfied with this? I want more. Like that feeling, like a woman wanting more is probably the most subversive thing a woman can claim. And so it's like this very disruptive thing. Like I've built this beautiful life. Why the fuck would I like mess that up? It's not necessarily, it doesn't feel comfortable. It's really getting out of the comfort zone and the nest and that safety that one has created to say, okay, and then now what? Like, so it's, it can disrupt a lot of things. And it's at a time when a lot of people are really established in their relationship or in their mortgage or in their parenting or in their career. They've probably attained some degree of what they've wanted by their 40s in some sense. And then it's like, oh, now I'm shaking that up. What?
Yes.
And then just having some guidance through that, because I felt like I walked through a lot of that pretty alone. I mean, I did have the company of a lot of my girlfriends who, you know, we meet in council regularly and talk about these things pretty candidly. So I had support, I had a therapist, like I have very well resourced, and still it was lonely.
Yeah.
Which is what made me want to share this. And I started sharing it on Instagram as like a part of the 100 day project, which is like a creative project on Instagram. I just started yesterday. This year's project began, and this is my ninth year doing it.
Wow.
But I started sharing this 3 years ago that way. And people were like DMing me and commenting and being like, this should be a book, and like telling me their story. And I was like, huh, maybe this is the book. Maybe this is where I share this more widely. Even though it felt really vulnerable to do that.
Yeah. But you had the safety of, you know, like little bite-sized pieces here and there to get you some courage.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Wow. Really, really beautiful. Really awesome. I have a question. So most of my listeners, I would say, are a little bit younger, more like in their 20s and figuring things out, maybe not even to quite their Saturn return time. So yeah. They have a little bit of ways to go.
Yeah.
What advice would you give even to yourself? Like if you were in your 20s and you were about to navigate mm-hmm. all of this change and transformation, what would you mm-hmm. suggest?
I think it's so hard to give blanket advice, you know,
just to yourself, even
are different. Yeah. But what I would have said to myself in my 20s, I think I was onto something in my 20s when I was leaving corporate world for things that felt more aligned. Even though that looked bananas to everyone outside of me, I was really like, I was living in New York City. I was pretty financially successful doing like this early .com boom, you know, ad tech stuff. And it was like killing me. And I grappled with how to, like, if I should leave that and like pursue something that I had no real idea about, how, if I could sustain myself with it and all of that. And I did still follow this internal voice and thought like, you know, if I jump, the net will appear, was the sort of feeling I had in my 20s. And it was a little naive, you know, but also I still feel it. Like it's not like I'm like, oh, no, that's not true. Like it is, like, it's what I'm doing again. So I think what I would say to her is like, follow that inkling, that little voice inside that says like, this isn't your life, like live the life that's yours. There's an urgency, I think, around the Saturn return and Uranus opposition, and a little, maybe even more so, where you're like, oh fuck, the second, first half of light, like I need to start living this life that's mine, and how wonderful to do that earlier on. And I know that that is part of that feeling, or at least what I was feeling in my late 20s was like, I need to live this for me, not for what other people are going to think about what I'm doing, not for anyone else. Because it doesn't benefit anyone. It's not that that's like selfish to live your own life. I think that it's like uncomfortable to see, I guess, when people aren't being fully true to themselves, even if it's like they're doing all the socially accepted things. It's, you can always sense that like, oh, that's a little off. But like when you see someone just like really radiating their truth and their essence, it's an invitation to do the same.
Yeah.
So if I could have been doing that more fully earlier, that would have been awesome. And I would still give myself that advice today. It's not like the easiest thing to do, you know, but I'm trying.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. I think that that's great advice. It's really hard advice to take and great advice to receive.
Yeah, I wish I had something more concrete or
No, that's great. I think that's perfect. That, you know, I have lots of clients that come to mind who, you know, people spend a lot of time in the like, I want to do this, but should I or should I not phase before they jump. And I have some clients who are in that phase, and, you know, part of me just wants to push them. Right. But you can't do that, obviously.
Right. You can't do it. Yeah,
you can't do that. Right. You just have to wait patiently and support them along the way. But, you know, from the outside, I can see what it would look like for them to be on the other side of that jump and how amazing it would be. But again, you know, it's their own timing, and it'll happen when it's supposed to happen, when they feel strong enough. Not that you ever really even feel strong enough, maybe, but something in them.
I think sometimes, we feel our smallest, or, you know, I think sometimes when we're doing something new and we feel scared and small, it can be actually the times where we're most powerful because we're trying to do something new. So I don't know. I always think of that. I don't even know who said it, but like you regret the things you didn't do more than the ones you did.
Totally.
I try to think about that, you know, when I'm like, should I or shouldn't I? And it's like, you know, I had this moment in my 40s where I had an emergency appendectomy, and it's actually kind of a funny story in my book. I won't give you the whole thing, but like, I was about to be wheeled into surgery, and I was having this like very dramatic. It's not like, I mean, appendectomy, they do how many a day? I don't know. You know, it's not necessarily like threatening, but I was like, oh my God, if I die, I still haven't done the thing, you know, a feeling. But I try to think about that, like not that moment, but like that feeling, you know, daily of like, this is the one life that I have or that I get to remember. And so I want to like wring it dry of all of the juiciness. And like, I want to explore myself, like all of the edges of myself while I'm here.
Yeah. Beautiful. It sounds like you're doing a great job of that.
Trying to. Thank you.
Yeah. It's awesome. Awesome to see, and awesome for you to put it out for other people to see all the nitty gritty details, whether they're, you know, pretty or not, just putting them out there. I think that it's going to really resonate with a lot of people, all the different pieces of your book. That's really, really awesome. Mm-hmm. I aspire to do something so brave one day.
Thanks. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it's also not just my story. It's like, it's what's called a teaching memoir. So it's part memoir and part like self-help or self-inquiry. Yeah, I have these sections at the end of each chapter that are a little more didactic, like parts that talk about, you know, attachment styles or whatever, like a certain theme. And then some exercises that are journaling, creative, you know, like art-based, and then some like personal ceremony type suggestions at the end of each of the 13 chapters. They're like 13 different themes. And I think those apply at any, I mean, they are written for midlife, but I think that during different life transitions, those questions and those art practices and ceremony and ritual pieces are probably relevant, you know, to different people at different times. So hopefully that speaks to people. It's like, not just like, who am I? It's not just like my story, you know, but also some of those tools that I've gathered along the way in my career and just as a human.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. I love that layout. I think that's a great idea. I'm excited to read it and dive in and explore. I think that sounds really great. And I'll link, it's for pre-sale right now. So I'll link that in the show notes and all of your social media and everything like that. Is there anything else that you want to add before we end?
Thank you. I've really, I've enjoyed talking with you, and it's really an interesting thing to look at, like the different transition points that each of us are in. And I enjoy your podcast, and I've followed you for a while, so it's just so nice to connect. And thanks for letting me come on here and talk to your listeners. And and people can reach me, you know, the different places in the show notes. I do one-on-one coaching. I do midlife coaching, and I do something I call integrity coaching, just about alignment to center, regardless of phase of life. And I'm rolling out a bunch of different programs this year after the book, around different themes that I touch on in my book. So I have a lot coming up that people might want to, you know, I don't know, sign up for my newsletter or check out in case any of those themes might be interesting to them. And and my book is on pre-order, and it publishes April 11th. So you can order it now, and then it'll be in your hands by mid-April.
Awesome. Really exciting. That's 2 days after my birthday. Maybe I'll get it for myself as a birthday gift so that I can have it to prepare myself for 12 years from now. Get ready.
Get ready. This is like a really early study session.
Yeah. Hey, it's good to have more information than less, I think. Awesome. Cool. Okay. Well, thank you, Jen. I really appreciate it, and have a beautiful day.
Thanks. You too, Maya.
All right, there you have it. I hope you enjoyed that episode with Jen. It was so nice to have her on the podcast. And as I mentioned, all of her stuff is mentioned in that podcast. I'm going to have everything linked down below in the show notes. Access to all of her social media and website and book presale. So I hope you enjoyed. Let me know if you liked this, if you like the interview type of style. And if you do, if you have any, you know, recommendations, suggestions, requests for who I could interview next time. So I will catch you in the next one. Bye.